I'm Eric Warista, and welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam Shore and I are excited to bring you this new podcast, giving you content direct from the point of view of two long-tenured season ticket holders. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you. I'm Eric Warista.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Well, Noam, last weekend we went down to Gillette Stadium. The Revs coming into the game, 14th place in the East, losers at 5 in the 6, 2-3 places off the bottom of the Supporter Shield standings. Total opposite of last season, and a real Sunderland till I die kind of vibe to it.
Right. I think that's a great analogy, having just watched that series, which I do recommend to our listeners. It's really surprising to have a team, right, that just like Sunderland was in the Premier League one day, and then a couple of years later, all the way in League One. Here we have the Revs coming off of a record season, really, in relegation zone. And the games kind of feel like that. The Miami game, very much in that vein of just trying to avoid any further loss, just get through with a win.
Right, and Miami not much better and not much higher up the standings than the Revs. So this had the real feel of a classic Premier League relegation six-pointer, where you could get a six-point swing in the standings from one game by having two terrible teams play each other,
right.
which is what it felt like. I mean, you'd watch the Revs games coming into this, and they didn't seem like a team that was confident. There seemed to be a little bit of infighting amongst the team, or not fighting, but just conflict about what to do and where to be and who should be where and when. And they didn't look good. It looked like more than just the usual hangover after a strong season the year before.
Right. Well, it's worth talking maybe a little bit about the DC game, which preceded the Miami match, which was really just a shocking game. The Revs went up 1-0 early, and at the beginning of the game, they looked good. They were all over the field. They had solid defense, good chances. By with a great strike out of all people, smashes one into the left side of the goal. But it's quickly unraveled with a series of careless giveaways and plays, and before you know it, 17 minutes later, DC's up 3-1, and Carlos Heel is yelling at Bruce Arena. It's like, how could this happen? Like, how did the Revs manage to go from 73 points to Carlos Heel just flipping out on the sideline?
Yeah, and one of our friends asked us that before the Miami game. You know, what actually our friend's son, Colin, asked us, you know, what happened? What's different this year? And we had some theories, but it was tough to boil it down to just one issue, right? You had Matt
right.
Turner's been injured. The central defenders haven't been on the field at the same time very often. Tejan Buchanan is gone to a European club in Belgium. And the new folks that have come in haven't made a huge difference. It's sort of been a little all over the place. So, but there was still some reason for optimism heading into that Miami game. You know, we were expecting 25,000 plus. You know, Miami is not a good team. You know, this is sort of the easy part of the schedule that they fumbled through. And Turner was back in goal after fighting off tendonitis, frostbite, and it seemed like a million other injuries.
Right. It was great to see Matt Turner back in goal. He got a nice ovation and cheer when his name was called at the starting lineup announcements. That was definitely exciting. And he commanded the goal very nicely all game, although he didn't have that much to do. I mean, he didn't make any mistakes. Looked solid, as he always does. But yeah, it was. I think it was coming off of that shocking DC game and a team seemingly in disarray. The Revs seemed intent on just not allowing any counterattacks. I feel like that was their goal. And it helped at the beginning just to have a stunning first-minute goal from first-time starter Rivera, which I do want to call that play out because even from where we were sitting, that was a goal of beauty. Very nicely executed counter by the Revs. Heel with a slicing through pass to Rivera making a great run behind the defense and just slices the ball behind the goalie into the net. You could see from our angle even it was a very nice play, and that was very exciting. I think the Revs needed that goal to start off the game. But after that, even without Miami threatening, and they lost their best player to injury, and then they lost another defensive starter to an injury in the first half hour, the Revs were just making sure that they weren't making any silly mistakes. There was just a little bit of gun-shy after what was been happening the last few weeks.
So important to get off to a great start and a fast start, and that seemed to set the tone, but then it quickly slipped into this pattern that they've had this season where they're creating a lot of chances, and I think the stats reflect this if you look at expected goals, but they're not finishing them. And this was a game where they had a lot of help in winning the game. You know, Miami's best player, arguably, who scored a hat trick against them last time, gets injured, you know, maybe 10 minutes into the game, has to come off. They had another injury resulting in a substitution about 10 minutes after that. And then there were two red cards, so they ended up finishing 11-9. So it may have been just the kind of game they needed to stabilize and turn around the season. Or if they don't pick up a win, you know, and string some wins together, we could look back at this and say, well, that was an aberration. They had a lot of help, and nothing had really changed versus the first, you know, five or six games of the year.
Yeah, well, this issue of consistency has been an interesting one, and it brings up in my mind a question about their roster. And is it a good roster? Are they still trying to piece it together? Do the symptoms that they showed in D.C. Reflect a deeper issue? And the game against Miami was against a team that's not the strongest team overall, of course, in terms of their record, and lost their main scoring force and leader on the field right at the beginning of the game. So that was going to be an uphill battle, especially after the Revs scored a first goal. But to your point, they didn't finish their chances. They didn't get a second goal until they were up a person and due to red card advantage. And they came close before that and after to scoring more, but only two goals still on the night. So are the Revs really that much better than another relegation team?
Right, and it's fun. I do enjoy talking about relegation, even though there's no relegation in MLS. It feels very relegation-y as you move through, and you're getting blown out. You're not playing well. The team's not playing well. And
I'm trying to make the season interesting, right? At least for any of the other leagues in the world, wherever your team is, it means something.
Right, exactly.
Here it's just being relegated out of the postseason. But that's one way to look at it.
We talked about this a little bit on Saturday, and you felt like the roster moves had a certain logic to them, or do you want to take the ball on that?
Well, it seemed like they had a great base to work from last year, right? And I can understand that. Obviously, 73 points on the season, best ever regular season for MLS. And so it seemed like they were bringing in some seasoned veterans to strengthen the bench for a number of different competitive runs in the U.S. Open Cup, Champions League, Supporter Shield, playoffs, having more presence, more options off the bench, right? That did seem a little bit of a challenge last year where they had their best starting 11 on the field that they needed to make adjustments or come back in a game, who exactly was going to come off the bench. Though we're always cheering for Boateng, but aside from Boateng, who else would come on? And the new signings have largely not worked out so well. Legette, he had his presence on the field pretty well at the beginning of the season. I thought he had a decent game on Saturday, but it was still quiet, hit the post. Maybe that would have changed my perception a little bit if that ball had gone in. But he's not someone that lights up the field. And, you know, I'm hoping that Altidore gets his feet going. Hoping that the other signings get, you know, and Gonzalez get their feet back. But that presence of Buchanan that we've talked about extensively wasn't replaced, it seems like. And maybe these veteran players were supposed to sort of combine and replace some of that scoring ability and just knowledge on the field and capability, but they haven't been able to drive the revolution forward. And I just wonder if that frustration is boiling over in the team somehow, that they had a part of the chemistry that worked out really well last year with Buchanan. And now that he's gone, the Revs haven't figured out how to replace him. And is that a failure of management and Bruce Arena, or is the team just not clicking? Is it something that will fix itself later in the season?
The chemistry is a good point that you bring up, because the chemistry on the team seemed very strong last year. They seemed to really play with a lot of joy. They seemed to play for each other. Some of that was just because they were winning, I think, that it just looked like such joyous soccer out there. So I don't know if having this large influx of new players has created a chemistry issue on the team, as there's maybe more competition for playing time. I think I agree with you in the sense that the big picture strategy of having a deeper roster for the Champions League and some of the other competitions has a certain logic to it. But to me, it seems like panic. It continues to seem that way. And here's sort of my argument is the Champions League is over as of tonight. Seattle's playing Pumas in the second leg. Good luck to the Sounders. Hopefully they'll be the first MLS team ever to win the Champions League. That could have been the Revs, and I think that could have been the Revs without these roster additions, because, you know, this thing is over by the first week of May. And so all that depth, which is nice to have when you're going through that game, those games, what happens to those guys as the MLS season goes on? Are you still trying to find minutes for Omar Gonzalez and Josie Altidore and Sebastian Legette and some of the others? Or does it create a chemistry issue, or do you need them to get there? And what I would look at is I think we all sort of thought Legette was going to offset the loss of Tejan Buchanan. I would look at it a slightly different way. One of the guys they let go was Scotty Caldwell, who, you know, he wouldn't set the world on fire necessarily, but he could eat up a lot of minutes. He was very dependable defensively, solid in possession. And my sense is well-liked within the team and by the fans. So, you know, Legette hasn't really replaced Buchanan, but I don't know that he's equaled the consistency that Revs got out of Scotty Caldwell. He may have given them a little more quality at times, but there have been other games where he's been less visible than maybe fans would have hoped for.
Right. It seemed like last year that maybe there was more competition and for Caldwell and he wanted more playing time elsewhere. But it seems like the players that are with the team this year are not fulfilling that role as needed. And all of a sudden, Arena is going out and signing new players to come in. Perhaps, as you say, because they realize that the roster is not set up as they had thought it would be.
And
far from me to make a determination like that as a non-manager and a simple podcaster, sports fan of the Revs. But, you know, it's this the mirror image where last year, like you said, they were having fun and they had this great saying, these are the guys, like, it's us, we're scoring, you know, 73 points in the season.
Right.
And I feel like this year it's like, these are the guys, like, this is how we're playing. Like, really?
Yeah, and it's very frustrating. And I think that roster confusion to me, in that sense of panic, when I look at the goalkeeper position, so they enter the season, Matt Turner obviously is leaving next month and has been injured for most of the beginning of the season. But he came into the season as the headline starting goalkeeper, backed up by Brad Knight. And then they signed Earl Edwards, who had been around the league a bit, had been with DC United. And we've seen a little bit of him, you know, kind of up and down performances. They drafted with their number one pick in the MLS draft, Jacob Jackson out of Loyola Marymount. He's been fairly invisible. I don't think we've seen him in the senior team, maybe in the preseason once. And then they just signed Jordi Petrovic out of the Serbian league, who's supposed to be really good, but I think he's joining the team soon. So that's right now, for at least for the next month, they have five goalkeepers on the senior roster, nominally at least. You know, really it's just Turner, Edwards, and Jackson. But again, what's going to happen once Turner leaves? You're down to four, I guess, which still seems like too many.
And I feel a little bit bad for Edwards. I feel like he had a good start in, I think, his first game or the first part of the game. But I think it's not exactly possible to stop all those counterattacks that the Revs were giving up. So if you put Edwards in the game against Miami, for example, I think he would have had a shutout too. So I wonder how difficult the goalkeeping issues really are, or if it's really partly just a story of the Revs not being able to control the midfield and allowing too many chances to come through.
Right, and I think it, you know, my criticism of the roster isn't so much to criticize an executive or a player. It's more that I feel like teams have to find that right balance of consistency and confidence in what they're doing without becoming complacent. And if you don't have enough consistency, then no one really knows what the plan is. If you have too much consistency, it can border on complacency in some situations. The Revs just seem like they've tilted from one extreme last year, where they had a very consistent, high, excellent level, to this year. There's no real consistency in the lineup. And again, some of that is injuries. Some of that is a number of different competitions resulting in some roster juggling. But something is lacking, and this is what I would put my finger on, I think, just the lack of consistency that they've been able to get,
right,
even if it's just bad luck that they haven't been able to have a consistent lineup out there.
Yeah, and you know, you hear a lot about having a need for a strong roster, with depth to have a feeling of competitiveness to get to the field, but it seems like when, due to the injuries, the new signing, you know, people who were maybe not getting starting opportunities at the beginning were now on the field, that didn't turn out so well either for that group. So in Miami, we saw consistency as a team for the first time in a while in terms of control,
right,
and not preventing and not allowing counters. But it was their core starting lineup that, where does that lineup go to, you know, through the course of the season where you need other people to come in?
So one thing that's we had been consistent about is eating before the games, and we thought we'd start a new segment on the show where we review some of the restaurants around Patriot Place that Noam and I have been checking out. So do you want to introduce where we were this week, or should I?
Sure, we can jump in. We went to Echelito's, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Taqueria. Echelito's Taqueria, which is a little bit further up the path there at Patriot's Place. Usually my favorite place to eat is Bar Louie's, but it was very crowded and seemed a little understaffed, as a lot of eating establishments are these days. And so we weren't sure how that was going to work in terms of having a place to sit.
A pregame restaurant has to strike the right balance. A pregame, it's going to be the right food, and you've got to be able to get it and get out and get to the stadium by kickoff. So it's a little bit of a juggling act, even if you get there early, because now it is pretty crowded. There were, I think, 25,000 plus in the stadium Saturday night.
Right.
And so the lines everywhere were long, but Bar Louie was particularly jammed. And that being more of a sit-down place, it just wasn't going to happen. So we decided to move on, right, and try something new, and that's how we ended up at Echelito's.
Yes, so I was pretty happy with our dinner there. I had a vegetarian impossible meat substitute. That was quite tasty, very satisfying. You could just take it to go easily and eat it outside on some of the walkway bench areas there. And it got me through the game. So I highly recommend as a eating establishment. It's faster. You don't have to sit down. You can take it to go easily. And it kind of fits that bill of pregame flexibility, but nutritious, tasty food.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. Good value for the money. I had a steak burrito and a Coke. And yeah, very solid. I got the chips too. The chips were a little heavier than I'd like. They make their own, it looked like. And often when that happens, the chips are a little lighter than what you might buy in the store. But these seemed a little bit kind of in the middle. They were good, not great. But the burrito was excellent. Throughput was pretty good. I think we were in and out of there in about 20 minutes. We've been to some other places, fast food places in Patriot Place, that have taken, you know, closer to 45 minutes or more to process people through the line. And you know, it's a tough time for restaurants now. They're short staffed. They're looking for people. They're dealing with a essentially a rush hour crowd. But I thought they did a good job. I would go back for sure to Acholito's. And it's just past the Five Guys for anyone who's going down and trying to figure out where it is.
Right. And there is seating inside, not a lot. So if the weather is good, just plan on eating outside. Well, I'm looking forward to trying out more establishments in this beginning series of features on this podcast. This will be a good incentive to explore the different options at Patriot's Place.
Yeah, it gives us an excuse to mix it up, and looking forward to having a little more detailed restaurant reviews coming down the pike soon.
Sounds good.
And we'll look forward to this weekend's game against Columbus, another big game. They're sort of all big games now, even though the season just feels like it just started.
Right, and this is a more of a top-tier competition. Columbus sitting mid-table, I believe, playing pretty well, so it'll be good for the Revs to have some higher competition level and see how they perform after the Miami win, see if they can build on that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even though they only have 10 points from 9 games and it's been sort of a disastrous start to the season, they're only 8 points out of first place, and a win this weekend could vault them into the playoff zone. So, you know, it's early to be talking about that for sure, but still plenty of time. It's a long season, and hopefully they can string a couple wins together and move up the table pretty quickly.
Sounds good. Looking forward to this match.
All right. Thanks, Noam.
All right. Take care, Eric.
Thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.